Good evening. Welcome to the West Covina Unified School District. October 11th, 2011, meeting of the Board of Education. This evening's meeting, we'll call this meeting order at 6 o'clock and open with public comment. We're going to go to closed session. We have several items to discuss in closed session. Is there anybody who wishes to discuss or make public comment regarding closed session items? Seeing none, we will adjourn to closed session. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are back in open session at 7:40 this evening. Again, I apologize for the time we spent in closed session, but it was important and certainly productive. We'll start this evening's meeting with if you'll stand and let's just take a moment to gather our thoughts in a moment of silence. Thank you. Would you join me in the pledge, please?
Ready?
Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Coffey?
Here.
Miranda Jimenez? Here. Ms. Shoemaker?
Here.
Mrs. Bowles?
Here.
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 This evening in closed session, the following action was taken. It was moved by Cami Pola, seconded by Jessica Shoemaker, and approved to expel the following pupil from the school district: student number 180763, education code 48900. C, unlawfully possessed, used, sold, or otherwise furnished, or has been under the influence of certain controlled substances, and the vote on that was 5-0. The pupil is expelled and will not be eligible to apply for readmission until the date set in his rehabilitation plan. Also in closed session, by unanimous vote, under closed session item B, personnel, public employee, discipline, dismissal, release, transfer, the board took action to approve a statement of charges for dismissal of a certificated employee. As a confidential personnel matter, the district may not disclose any further information regarding this action at this time. Thank you for your patience. With that, we do have scheduled this evening a public hearing for the purpose of public input on the sufficiency of the 2011-2012 textbooks and instructional materials. Is there administration comment on this at all?
No. By Ed Code Section 60119, we must hold a public hearing to make sure that all students in the district have sufficient standards, aligned instructional materials. And we do have a resolution in this board agenda stating that that is true.
All right. Is there anybody that would like to address the board on this public hearing matter? Hearing none, the public hearing is closed. Opened at 7:41, or 7:42, and closed at 7:43. I have nothing to report. Anybody else have anything to report? Any board members, board education board? Miranda Jimenez.
Two things. Number one, that over at Orangewood, they did a really, really great back-to-school night. There was a lot of parents, great participation, lots of excitement. The second thing is I want to commend Edgewood High School. I went ahead and attended the tour of the high school, and Bassett said that they were incredibly impressed. In fact, I heard from my contact at the board member that our high school was looked at as something of the future, that they would like to aspire to, and that they were really impressed by the work we were doing. So I want to say thanks to everyone involved, Mr. Travatori, Ms. Gonzalez, and everyone who led the tour. They did an excellent job. It was first class.
At Lyons today, they were talking about doing the eye screenings at the school. And I just want to commend Dr. Hill for doing those screenings. And then also the foundation for providing glasses to the students who were found needing glasses and who couldn't afford them. So I think that's a great benefit to the community, and I anyone who participated, I just appreciate that.
All right.
I just have something really terrific that I want to share with you. Today, the state came out with their 2012 California Distinguished Schools Eligibility List for recognition. This year, they're focusing on elementary schools, and they're looking at schools with an API of greater than equal or greater than to 832. 422 schools in the state received this recognition and the ability to apply, put in an application. 97 were from LA County, and 4 were from West Covina.
Great.
Wow.
Okay.
And so the 4 schools are Merlinda, Monte Vista, West Cove, and San Jose Charter Academy.
All right.
So we're very proud of our schools and the work that they're doing. Mm-hmm. We'll encourage them to apply.
Great, thank you. Student representative report, Megan.
Hello. I have a report for each high school in the district, so I'll start with Edgewood. They have IB reps visiting their school November 3rd and 4th to accredit their school, so they're really looking forward to that. October 19th, they're having their second Renaissance Rally of the year, so their ASB is preparing for that. They are now CIF certified, which is good for their sports teams who are now in season and competing, and they have begun forming clubs, and UNICEF is one of their main service clubs on campus, and they've begun raising money to support the club and help it grow on campus. Next, I have Coronado High School. So far, they're doing well in their sports. Football is their main athletic focus right now, and they're 2-1 in their season. And they're actually, for the first time, working on creating a wrestling team for their school, so they're going to start that next week, which is really exciting for them. They're planning their winter formal December 16th at Cocoa Palms, and their tickets are on sale right now, so their students are interested in that. And I found this really interesting. Last summer, before school started, the students nurtured and planted their own garden, and now as they go back in school, it's starting to grow, and so all the students have a part of themselves in that garden, so I think that's really interesting. And they're also working on getting off-campus lunch based on citizenship, academics, and attendance. And last year, they were named a model school for the 2010-2011 school year based on the CCEA and state superintendent. So they're still celebrating that and striving for that award this year. So we're really proud of them. And lastly, West Covina. Lately, we've been talking about our CST report and sharing our scores with the students and the parents, and just reflecting and setting goals for our tests at the end of the year. We have really exciting news. 2 of our senior students, Kristen Austin and Julia Chen, were finalists for the National Merit Scholarship for their PSAT scores. So it's a really big honor. Only about 3% of the test takers get recognized, so we're very, very proud of them. Going off of that, our PSAT is October 15th, so our underclassmen are getting prepared for the SAT with that. We're informing our students about WASC, just getting everyone prepared for their visitation coming up. And like I reported 2 weeks ago, our UC and CSU workshops are going on this week, Wednesday and Thursday, during third period. And I'd just like to thank the board and any other people who came and supported our homecoming festivities. We had over 800 people at our dance, so it was very successful. It was a lot of fun. So thank you for that. And lastly, we have our Red Ribbon Pancake Breakfast next Saturday, October 22nd, at the school. So everyone is invited. We really welcome you. We have performances and food, so please feel free to come by. Thank you.
Mr. Cox, we have our representatives from Coronado and Edgewood. I'd like just to introduce them to the board.
Great. Oh,
Mia Tapia. Is from Coronado.
Right.
And Lauren Ramirez is from Edgewood.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you. Great. All right, items from the floor. I have one request to speak. Lisa Ferranti.
Good evening. My name is Lisa Ferranti. I just wanted to take this opportunity this evening to come and invite the school board members as well as district personnel to Walnut Grove's Healthy Hawks Walkathon that's going to happen on October 26th during Red Ribbon Week. We're really excited about this event. It's our first attempt. to use healthy measures to earn funds, to generate funds for educational programs at Walnut Grove. So we're really excited about that, and our goal is to reach $5,000 to use toward educational programs at Walnut Grove. So what we're doing, since we're a small, sort of new school, getting things off the ground, we're reaching out to the community and encouraging both our school staff as well as any district staff that might be interested to be great examples and to come walk with our students if you so desire. If you like, but it's not required, you could also get sponsorships for you to come and walk with us that day. The students will be walking during their PE classes and staff on their breaks, lunch hours, and it is voluntary. We don't, you know, it's all if they wish to participate. But we're really excited. So we're hoping if you're available on October 26th and would like to join us, you're more than welcome to do so. Put on your walking shoes. Come over. Stop for even a few minutes would be great. The students would love to see some of the administrators coming and supporting them as long as they're walking as well. And just a personal note on a different area, personal for mine, this is my 24th year of being involved and having children in West Covina Unified. And I'm not always able to be here at board meetings. I have another conflict have meetings at the same time. But I do appreciate whoever goes to the extent of putting the proceedings of the meetings on audio. So I do listen to them at home. So just so whoever does that, I do appreciate that ability to be able to keep on top of what's happening within the school district. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Would anybody else like to address the board at this time? All right, we'll go to the organizational item and the approval of the agenda and consent items. Does anybody want to put anything on consent? Number 8. Number 8 on the resolution for the. Oh, you know what? Let's leave it off. Number 9 or anybody anything else? No. 10 is on.
11 and 12.
Mike, any problem? Okay. 11 and 12 on consent. Anybody want to take anything off of consent? All right. Is there a motion, please?
Second.
Been moved by Eileen Miranda Jimenez, seconded by Mike Spence, to approve the agenda with the addition of putting items number 11 and 12 on consent. Any objections? What's that? Any objections? Motion passes 5-0. Motion is so ordered, excuse me. Item number 3, then, is the next item. Item 3 is a revision of board policy, first reading.
Yes, these are actually two items that fall under human resources, and Mr. Seaman will go over them with you.
The first one that you have there, AR 4112.22, it's a new AR. We don't have one that exists, but this covers information that deals with teaching of EL students. We still have a handful of teachers that don't have EL qualifications. They're working on those, and we have no English learners in their classes, but this is something that we are required to have in our board policies.
Comments, anybody? Questions? Concerns? Is there a motion on this item, please?
I have one on the next item, on the next one.
I'm on item number 3.
Okay.
Well, then
there's 3C2, the fingerprinting.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
542.1?
Yeah.
Armando, would you address that, please?
So this is about students, not employees.
I was listening. This is also a new AR having to do with fingerprinting of students, and it also talks about teachers being responsible for reporting any missing students once they've been told that these students are missing, and to have a place in the school where they put up the posters that you see of missing children. It also says the board can, if they wish to, provide fingerprinting for kindergartners and any new students coming in. However, those fingerprints will be given to the parents and not kept at the school site for any reason. And it's you may do it. It's not mandatory to do that. And it's a brand new AR.
Thank you. So since you just finished with fingerprinting, so I just want to clarify that it's a benefit for the parents.
It's a benefit
almost
for
as
the
if
parents.
A community service because we're not making any money.
That's right.
Do you know if they're going to be doing any DNA, like hair, or just the fingerprinting, or it depends on who we contract with? Because it says we can contract public or private agencies.
Yeah, according to this AR, it would just be the fingerprinting.
Okay. And then I did look up the education code and the penal code on the identification and reporting of missing children. It did say that we had to post in an appropriate area for middle school and high school, but it didn't say that we could keep it away from the vantage point of students. And that's my concern. I don't want a middle school student or a high school student to be able to see as they walk into a copy room that their picture's on the wall or their friends or their. So I wanted to add in here, for all schools, the posters shall be posted in an area restricted to adults. And I looked up I looked them up to make sure that.
This one just talks about doing that for elementary school.
I saw that.
To add that to middle school, we could do that.
Yeah, I just wanted to spare any student any sort of embarrassment. You know, kids, they many times are in the middle of parents fighting, taking them from one end of the country to another, and so I just wanted to protect them.
Sure. If the board would like me to, I could add that to include middle school or even high school if you wanted me to. You just need to let me know how you want that changed.
I was going to suggest just simply that in all of our schools, the posters shall be posted in an area restricted to adults. That's.
I don't necessarily have a problem with that. My question would be at the high schools where, yes, you have break rooms or mail rooms or things like that that technically should be restricted to adults, but when students are like TAs in the office, they go into those rooms and things like that. So I'm not sure on the high school level how that would be accomplished.
It would probably be in the staff lounge where students are really not supposed to be in, but again, you can't always,
in high school, the staff lounge was next to the principal's office, but that's also where the mailboxes were, where as a student you would go in.
It's a little harder to do that with the older kids. With the younger kids, they don't go into the copy room. They don't go into the mail room and things like that, but you know, it's supposed to be restricted at the high school and middle school level, but you do get kids who are aides and things like that delivering things. So to keep it 100%, it would be very difficult to do.
Anything else?
I'm comfortable with saying we can make our best effort.
Okay.
Whenever possible. Yeah.
Put it in a location that's away from the view of students.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. Thank you.
I will do that.
Okay. Is there a motion for this item, please?
I'll move this item.
I'll second it.
Moved by Cami Polis, seconded by Aline Miranda Jimenez, to accept for first reading following administrative regulations AR 4112.22 and AR 5142.4.1 fingerprinting program. Next item on the agenda is. Oh, excuse me. Is there all in favor, signify by saying aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Sorry about that. Item number 8, the proclamation for declaring sufficiency of instructional materials.
We held the hearing this evening for the purpose of determining whether each pupil in our district has sufficient standards aligned instructional materials. We did give the 10 days notice that we must provide. All of our principals have certified that we do have sufficient aligned standards aligned textbooks and instructional materials, and the law requires that the board adopt a resolution attesting to the sufficiency of these materials.
Thank you.
I'll second it.
Sorry, who moved?
I did.
Jessica. I'll tell you. Okay. It's been moved by Jessica Shoemaker, seconded by Cami Polis, to adopt the resolution attesting that all pupils in the district have sufficient textbooks or instructional materials for the 2011-12 school year. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Item number 9 is an information report on the California Common Core Standards.
Ellie is going to give a report. Approximately 48 states have adopted the Common Core Standards, California being one of them. It's an initiative, an important initiative that we will be working on in the next few years, and we wanted the board to have the most up-to-date information on this initiative.
Good evening. In front of you is a copy of the PowerPoint, and then there is also a parent handbook that I'll describe briefly. I'm pleased to share with you some information about the Common Core State Standards and how they will impact California and West Covina. The development of the Common Core State Standards was a state-led initiative, not the state of California, but the states as in the United States. The chief school officers initiated the program. They gained the support of the National Governors Association, and with the backing of that organization, the Center for Best Practices developed the Common Core State Standards. Those were developed by the National Governors Association late in 2009. They were not developed by the federal government, and at this time, they are not part of ESEA or the reauthorization of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. They are, however, I think, tied to the federal government in the sense that adoption of the Common Core State Standards was required if states intended to apply for Race to the Top, and California did. Why Common Core State Standards? What we're talking about is a set of standards that is common across the United States. And one of the things I think that all of the states learned through NCLB and the requirement for standards is that every state working alone created different sets of standards, and they varied widely, both in structure, rigor, expectations. And we know that the jobs of the future are going to take a different type of skills, that global competitiveness is going to require a very high level of skills, and high school diplomas will not be enough to prepare our students for college or careers. And the power of Common Core State Standards really lies in the commonness of them, that it does set a common expectation across the nation in terms of content and rigor. And it will offer us an economy of scale that we currently do not have. Right now we have 50 states working in isolation to develop their standards, their curriculum, their assessment. With the Common Core, we will be able to pool our resources to develop common curriculums, common professional development, common assessments, and common best practices. The Common Core state standards are aligned with certainly college expectations for college entry, for entry into the workplace with jobs that have a competitive, livable salary. They are focused and coherent, and I think this might be a little bit hard for us to understand why focused and coherent is a big part of this, because California has a good set of standards. They're very specific, and they're recognized to be among the most rigorous in the nation. That's not true with other states. In some states, the standards are sort of grade span expectations, like in students in grades 1 through 3, and then it has a list of standards or expectations. And what the Common Core does is become far more specific, grade level by grade level, both about content and about what students should be able to do with that content. And really, they are built upon the strengths of 50 states having developed content standards over the last 10 to 15 years. And we've learned from that, and now I think all of that has come together in the development of the Common Core. These standards are internationally benchmarked, and when we are looking at them and working with teachers on them, we really should think about them in terms of the widest possible access for all students. If we compare, I think, you know, we're all pretty familiar with the California State Standards. They've been with us since 1997. They are recognized among some of the most, some of the best in the nation. And in many ways, they are very similar to the Common Core, especially in content. There are differences. Certain concepts, certain skills are perhaps introduced at a different grade level. I think the biggest change for us will be that the Common Core truly integrates 21st century skills into the expectation. And this we'll see in terms of how students are expected to apply what they have learned. And I think that will have an enormous impact on instruction over the next, 5 to 10 years as we implement these. The Common Core is really about establishing a foundation for all students nationwide. I'm going to talk a little bit about how the Common Core standards are organized. They're in sort of two big groups. Let me just first mention that the implementation process in California started over a year ago. It started when the state Senate applied for Race to the Top and adopted the Common Core standards. Most of the work has been at the state level to this point, but now the state is really ready to embark upon both an assessment system and a system for developing the curricular frameworks, the adoption process, and an assessment process. And, of course, they're starting with language arts and math, except in the Common Core, language arts isn't isolated as language arts. It's established as language arts and literacy in history, social studies, social science, and technical subjects. And this will be a real shift. In grades 1 through 5, well, they're all sort of set up this way. There's an introduction to each set of standards, and then they're organized in 3 main sections. K through 5 is cross-curricular. So reading, language arts, history, social science, and science are all part of a comprehensive set of standards. In 6-12, English language arts is sort of divided into reading and related skills, and then another section on writing and language arts. And the writing and language arts is very much integrated with history, social studies, science, and the technical subjects. And the expectation will be that students not only are exposed to, but are expected to apply language arts skills, writing skills, in the technical subjects. So there'll be far greater emphasis on writing across the curriculum and a far greater expectation for teachers in history and science to be teaching the type of writing in that subject area. Key elements in language arts in the reading section certainly are a balance of literature and informational text. Probably a little bit more emphasis on informational text, so that would be nonfiction and technical documents. And then writing from a number of sources, so writing about sources. So students would be expected to read a number of things and then write about them. The standards for reading and writing in Hochschule studies really are designed to complement the content in those subject areas. So, for example, students might be expected in science to collect data, fill in a data chart, but then turn that data into a narrative. So writing in nonfiction, perhaps comparing studies or data sets, but really it's about the application of taking what they have learned and putting it into writing, and speaking standards are part of that as well. So language and writing, as I said, is going to be far more the responsibility of all subject areas. In math, I think there perhaps be some significant differences for us, especially at high school level. They do carry across all grade levels, both the development of mathematical concepts and mathematical skills. There will be a huge emphasis on actually applying those math concepts and skills, so in problem solving. In K-8, the standards are presented by grade level. And then at high school, they are presented by conceptual theme. So I think that we're sort of accustomed to that. I do think there will be a greater stretch for us in aligning at the high school level than we'll have in aligning at K-8 in math. And as I said earlier, the emphasis is really on application. So students be given situations and have to apply mathematical concepts to that. Key elements in math, focus on the early grade is number sense, so arithmetic and operations, and then it's sort of spread out across all grade levels. They are very consistent, I think, to California standards. In certain areas, we might see a concept that we currently are introducing in fourth grade. It might be moved to third, or something that we have been covering in second grade might be moved to third. But they're really quite consistent with our current math standards. A different emphasis on application. And then, as I said, the focus is on using the math. So again, more application. And they are designed for universal access. It is expected that all students, English learners, students with disabilities, will have full access to the content standards. A very big part of the Common Core state standards movement is the assessment piece. California has its own assessment system, and so does every other state. What the Common Core attempts to do is share that responsibility among states. There are two large consortiums currently. One is called PARC and Smarter Balance Assessment. California is part of Smarter Balance. There are about 30 states in Smarter Balance, I believe, and 29 in PARC, which doesn't add up because there are a few states who are currently in both. Mm-hmm. Eventually, they're going to have to make a decision. What is proposed in the consortium is a system of assessment that looks like this for grades 3 through 8 in high school. During the last, you can see from the beginning of this, like a timeline, beginning of the year to the end of the year, During the last 12 weeks of the year, students will participate in a performance assessment and the end-of-the-year assessment. During the year, there will be some interim assessments. Those can be adjusted by at the state level. There is also the option in this whole system to develop formative assessments at the district level, but they can all be part of this same system of students taking the test and then pulling the data out to assess student progress. I think it is different than our current system of we have about 12 days to do our testing each spring. Having it over 12 weeks will both create some challenges and opportunities for us. There is the possibility and the option for states to decide if students are allowed to retake a test during the last 12 weeks. So they could actually take the test if they don't do well, take it again a month later. Those are all options that are out there, and California is part of the group that will determine how that plays out. The assessments are going to look differently. There will be a performance task. We have, since the establishment of the standards in the state testing system, struggled with knowing that students' knowledge is only being assessed through multiple choice type questions. They take a performance assessment at fourth grade, seventh grade, and the CASE for writing. All other are multiple choice assessments. With Smarter Balance, the goal is that performance assessments will be integrated. There will be fewer multiple choice items. And one of the examples that was given to us last week was right now at third grade, we have a geometry standard on triangles. Right angles, I think, right triangles, isosceles triangles, I think there's three that are introduced at that level. And there's questions on the CST, and they show a group of triangles, and the students are asked to identify the isosceles triangle. In a performance assessment, the student will be asked to draw the isosceles triangle on the computer. So either using a touch screen and drawing it on, or actually using the software to draw that on. And I think that is a far different expectation in terms of how students are asked to demonstrate their knowledge. Many of the questions will be integrated, as I mentioned before, about somewhere between 10 and 30% of the math questions will be assessed in science. Example of that would be students asked to demonstrate their knowledge of a formula for slope. That might happen in, the context of earth science. Not all math will be measured in the math test. A good part of math will be measured in science. And same with language arts. The multiple choice items will be fewer in number. Right now we have tests that have, I would say, between 40 and 60 items. The technical development side of this believes they can do it with about half the number of items, so students will actually have to complete fewer items, and it will be done on a system that has been developed for, like, the graduate record exam, the DAT. These programs are somewhat intuitive in that if a student is working along and doing very well, having correct item after correct item after correct item, once it hits a certain point, the test stops, it's over. If a student is missing some along the way, it continues to present items until the student has exhausted the maximum number. So very different than what we're doing now, where every student needs to take every item. There are going to be some huge challenges with the whole assessment system, especially in the area of measurement. For every item that's developed and test that's developed, of course, it will be field tested. But then determinations will need to be established for what constitutes student growth, what constitutes on-track progress during the year. Is getting, you know, so many items right during the year indicate that you're on track or that you need to go back? The use of student growth data in determination of teacher and principal performance. This was a large part of the adoption of Common Core and Race to the Top application because it will take change in legislation to do it. And then, of course, the establishment of reliability of all of the test items and the test as a whole. Curricular timing. At what point in the instruction are these tests going to take place? We have formative assessments. Are they going to be taken at 12 weeks, 11 weeks? Are they going to be taken within a certain amount of time from when the instruction took place? So all of those things are yet to be determined. We don't know if the entire assessment system will be aligned with the reauthorization of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. And that alignment would be critical because most states, I don't think, would be able to support two systems. The information system or the data collection system is critical because if we collect all this data, we have to have a system that we can mine. So trying to develop a system that not only that we can put all of our data in, but then that we can get it out to determine what really works or doesn't work for particular students is critical. That's the point of the whole system. The timeline for the consortium has already started. They are currently working on the technical system. The state of Washington is acting as the lead on this, and they have quite a team that's working on different parts of that technical system. The item bank is in its early stages. They are actually asking for developing the structure to get input from all of the states. And from all levels, from local levels, teachers in K-12, from institutions of higher learning, and from the State Department. Field testing is scheduled for 2014, and it's expected to be operational in the 14-15 school year. So it's really not very far away. We're preparing for the transition, just as the state is. We have attended and will continue to attend state and county professional development, providing updates to principals and teachers. We need to inform and educate parents. A big task ahead of us is doing a gap analysis. When we look at the standards grade level by grade level, as compared to what we are currently teaching, where are we going to need to change our curriculums, add supplemental materials, perhaps delete things. So that will probably be the biggest task in the short term. And then, of course, to provide professional development, identify those materials, get them, and maybe even modify our own formative assessments. And then assess our own technology capacity and needs. If this is a test that students are expected to take online, how will that work? A 12-week period sounds like a good amount of time, but to adequately provide time for all of our students to be at a student workstation and take this test, I think will be a challenge. So we need to make sure that we have adequate tools for them to do that. I've provided for you a document that's prepared by the County Superintendent's Office, and it really is just a sampling of the Common Core standards for kindergarten through eighth grade. I marked a couple that you might want to take a look at on page 25. One of the grade 8 algebra standards has to do with slope. This is exactly the type of question or standard that could very well be assessed in the context of science rather than in math. And there's another one. On page 9, there is a kindergarten standard. But I think it gives us an idea of not only what kindergartens are expect to identify different shapes, but it would be this type of standard that in the future, rather than just picking the shape, students might be asked to actually draw the shape. There's one in language arts I wanted to share. In grade 7, one of the expectations is that students write arguments. It's on the top of page 39. Generally, our students have been given prompts to write literary analysis or something, but they might be asked to write arguments, say, in a social studies class. That would be world history. And the authentic or the performance assessment could actually be to do sort of online research. So they might be given the opportunity to go to selected websites. They would have to select, read, evaluate material, and from multiple sources, then write an essay. So that's, I think the level of rigor in some of those areas will be greater than the current expectation in California. If you have any questions, I'll certainly listen to them carefully. I'm not sure I have the answers yet, but I'll do my best. The last sign is on our own website, West Covina. If you go to Common Core link, it should link, and you can see we've put a number of resources directly on our own website. So it's under Department, Educational Services, and then the Common Core. And if you just sort of scroll down to the middle of the page, there are a number of links to Common Core information.
All right. Thank you very much.
Questions?
When I started getting involved with education things when my kids were kindergarten, second grade, that's when whole language was out and about, and the whole concepts about how children learn and the way that they evolve and that sort of thing. It's rather interesting to see the development and going sort of away from that, obviously, but into this last decade of standards based, and this seems like it is something that is kind of more, instead of going these up and down pendulum type swings, we're coming into this very critical area of standards and common standards. I think it's really an interesting aspect of what I think we're going to see in the future. But I like the continuity of what it is that they're doing in development, especially state by state. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say it's going to be great for when students move from state to state.
Right.
To have the common standards. The question I have is, on page the six, it's our page 3 of our handout, but the sixth slide,
yes.
The last bullet, it should be read to allow the widest possible range of students to participate fully, and then it said that all students should be allowed to participate. Does that... How wide is that going to go? And I know right now, some pretty high-functioning students take the Kappa. That
is there going to be a specific cutoff range, and how is that going to work when it's now we're going to be not only comparing people to students from California, but federally, and it's going to be there's going to be more of a need for people to want to be successful. Are they going to put more students in the CAPA program or a similar program because of the high stakes of this test?
I think that's one of the very big questions out there. The Common Core assessment piece, so under Smarter Balance, will not include assessments that we are accustomed to, like CAPA or CMA. However, the Common Core assessment piece, Smarter Balance, does not necessarily replace STAR. In California, we currently have a state testing and reporting system, STAR, that was developed under the Public Schools Accountability Act, and it was under that legislation that CMA, CAPA, the CELT test, the high school exit exam, our California standards test, they are all part of that huge system. We do not know yet how the two systems exactly are going to integrate. We do know that the consortium has said they will not be developing the equivalent of a CAPA. California still has every right to have a test like that, but it's one of the big questions. We have a Spanish test, academic test in the Spanish language. Common Core will not have that. They won't have a CELT. So we know that California still will need to have some California-specific assessments. We're just not exactly sure how the two systems are going to eventually integrate.
And is there a chance they wouldn't integrate and that we would have they would have almost double the testing that they do now?
One of the big concerns, of course, is that there would be a lot of redundancy.
Right.
And so we want to eliminate that. But all of those things will actually have to be done through the legislature because those tests were established by the legislature. So I think as the Common Core assessments are ready and ready for students to take, then California state standards test perhaps will start being removed from the list.
Possibly.
Yeah. Or it could be at particular grade levels. There are many, many options. So it's going to be a big transition.
And it's very interesting that it's all going to be done and using technology for a large portion of it. You talked about touch screens. How many touch screens do we have now?
Not enough.
But
they don't even know the technology yet.
It'll be different in 2015.
Just last Tuesday, right. I was at a meeting, and they were saying, they were giving that as an example. Everybody says touch screens, and they said, we don't know. They believe that one of the things that one of the gentlemen said is, if you buy a computer today, we believe that computer will be able to handle the system. We use touch screens to draw things, but there's other software that students can be taught to use to draw things. So, and they are recognizing that there might be the need for a paper version. There's some drawbacks about that, but they are pretty much acknowledging that there is going to have to be a paper version. I don't think people necessarily want to go there because that adds time and cost.
I was going to say, if there was a paper version, they said this could come back in days. But if it was a paper version, then we would be back to where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can I respond? I think this is a perfect time for our district as we were talking about possibly developing a strategic plan. If you look in the Common Core, it really is heavy in writing skills. Technology is a big piece of it. So looking at these core standards and seeing as they're being laid out, it might be a really good opportunity for us to do some strategic planning around them. So when we're looking at technology, where is it that we want to be and really focus our attention both to staff development and resources.
Anything else? Go ahead.
I know that it was adopted or it's currently being adopted in 48 states. Do you know, like, our IB program and our AP programs, how well they're being integrated into this curriculum? Because there's a lot of testing. Those kids have to take testing in May. Is it going to complement? Has that been addressed yet in the meetings you've attended?
I don't know if the Smarter Balance Consortium has addressed that. Right now, both IB assessments and advanced placement assessments are separate from any state testing. I don't know if there will be if there will be overlap, or if those particular programs would accept Smarter Balance results for their program.
In New York, IB lobbied our legislature to look at the state testing versus the IB testing to get some of the state testing waived because of the IB testing. So I don't think that would be probably in the beginning, but I could see that being down the line. And the rigor, I think, and the performance base of these tests are more aligned with the IB tests, because the IB is not multiple choice. So I could see that down the line that might be something that we look at as a state.
All right. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you.
Next item is item number 13, an item that we've all been anxiously anticipating so that we have an opportunity to hear again from our Assistant Superintendent Personnel Services to give us the first quarter report of the complaints and resolutions regarding the Williams Valenzuela Casey lawsuit settlement.
I'm glad to report we have no complaints file. Zero.
Thank you very much for that report. And that is the last item on the agenda for this evening. Any other Board of Education discussion?
Yes.
Shoemaker?
I would like an agenda item for the next board meeting. We got some information in our board packet regarding San Jose Edison and sort of closing numbers and things like that. And I have some questions on how some of the numbers were reached. And I think it's best addressed publicly. And also, I'm confused as to why we're sort of looking all the way back to 2008, 2009, because I would have assumed our books would have been closed. So I'm not quite sure why we're talking about reimbursements and credits for that time frame. And so I would like an agenda item to discuss that. And also, to complicate it, as part of the meeting last time, you approved a set number that we agreed to pay Edison. Well, some of those numbers don't necessarily add up with the report we were given. So I think that's something the board needs to discuss in terms of reimbursements to Edison and what's owed to us.
We'll be happy to do that. I just want to explain to the board that what we've done in terms of the information we received from our attorney about the management agreement being separate from the MOU, and in closing out the books, we have to use the management agreement. So we'll be happy to bring that to the board and explain that in more detail.
Anything else? Sorry. All right, dates. Remember, we have October 25th as our next board of agenda meeting. We will adjourn this meeting. However, we do have one more item in closed session that we unfortunately left off, and it will be discussed under the item B, personnel, public employee, discipline, dismissal, release, transfer, and appointment section. And I don't anticipate that we will have anything to report out. And we will adjourn to closed session at 8:35, 8:37.